This month on Head Speaks, we continue our Armageddon 2001 crossover with Hawkworld, and we have another look at Behind the Podcast. Stay tuned. Hello there, true believers. This is Head Speaks, a proud member of the Headcast Network family of shows. As usual, I am your host, Aaron Moss, a.k.a. Head. This is my mostly monthly Headcast, where I talk about comics, movies, role-playing games, TV shows, and anything else geeky that I want. So sit back and enjoy the ride. Let's begin. Before I start this next segment, I did want to make a little disclaimer. I was speaking with my next guest. It was a combination of time travel back in the 80s plus crossing over into Canada. So the sound quality had some issues here and there. Still a great segment, had a great guest. But I just want to give you guys a little heads up that in some spots it gets a little spotty. Cleaned it up the best I could. But I just want to let you guys know. Bear with me. Enough about that. Let's go ahead and start the segment. Let's go.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is
What's in Head's Long Box.
And once again, we're continuing my look at the Armageddon 2001 crossover. This week, I've got another special guest with me. This is my good buddy from over at DC in the 80s.
Hey.
Justin Fuqua. Am I pronouncing your name right, Justin?
No, you are not. You are so off. It's actually a French last name, Justin Franca.
Franca.
Yeah, like it's okay. You got it. So it's Franca. It's pretty close. In English, people call me Francaire.
I figured it was French, and I knew every time I pronounced it on the show, on my G.I. Joe show, when I talked about you for doing that Larry Hama interview, I know I was screwing your name up. I apologize.
The best was some UK blog. It was some UK audio podcast, and they called me Justin Francoeur for some reason. I got a kick out of that. It was nice. It was, it's all good. So, yes, thank you. Hey, welcome. Thank you for inviting me on your show, Eric.
Oh, very much so. I know we've talked plenty of times on Facebook, and I've done some stuff with you on your DC in the 80s website, and you've recently gotten me the Larry Hama interview, which I very much love and I appreciate. And I gave you the Soldier of the Month last month.
You were commenting on the G.I. Joe, our G.I. Joe thread about the G.I. Joe Impel cards from 91, which is supposed to be posted, by the way. But you were part of that. So that was just hilarious article series. I just have to finally post it at some point. But that was a great time. So I really enjoyed it.
And you transcribed a couple of my interviews I've had with, like, Paul Kupferberg and stuff, so.
Yes, the Vigilante and the
Checkmate.
Yes.
We're talking about those, yeah. So this is the first time we're actually talking voice-to-voice, though, so I appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk with me about this.
Well, I've read your words, so now it's nice to put a voice to the word. It's always nice to that. So,
same thing. Before we get started, we're here to talk about comic books. Why don't you tell everyone here how you found comic books, your love for comic books. What got you started reading comic books?
Well, it was actually my father, who was collecting for me when I was younger. I was born in 81, so that makes me 37. People aren't quick at math. I'm 37 now, but I was born in 81. I basically inherited a collection of comics. It was my dad who was collecting them. I had an older cousin who collected comics. He must have been about 4 or 5 years older than me, so he sold everything to my dad. So right off the bat, I'm maybe 6 or 7 years old, and I have a massive collection, maybe 300 DC and Marvel comics, all throughout the 80s. They didn't have anything earlier than 80, maybe 70. So I had a lot of, and it wasn't just like a single run of one thing. It was a lot of everything. So you had a few issues of Amazing Spider-Man. You had a few issues of Spectacular Spider-Man. You had a few Captain America. It, you know, you had Secret Wars number one, but none of the follow-up issues. It was a big mismatch of everything DC and Marvel. And this is actually what started me off because, you know, I had a few All-Star Squadron issues. You had Batman. I wasn't allowed to read them when I was young because my dad didn't want me to destroy them. But as I started to watch more cartoons and I kind of understood the gist things, and, you know, he started to let me look at them more often, and that's how I started. So my main collection is all, this is why I run a site called DC and 80s, because essentially throughout my youth, that's what I was reading. I was reading all the DC comics and the Marvels too, but a lot of DC comics from that era. So that's what I'm most familiar with. And as I got older, I just would go back and try and track down stuff I missed. I did get into comic book collecting for myself. I was buying them off the rack. That'd be in the 80s, early 90s, I was actually out there. So this is around the time Armageddon. So this is why I'm somewhat familiar with all this stuff. So that's my comic history. It's thanks to my dad and my cousin.
Very good. And speaking of Armageddon 2001, so you read this off the stand when it first came out back in 91?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I 91, I was not reading. I was reading barely any DC. I was reading a lot of Marvel, and because that's what all the rage was about. It was not 1991, you're reading Spider-Man versus Venom. I remember collecting Deadly Foes of Spider-Man. There was Deathlok, there was Darkhawk, there was G.I. Joe, Thor, there's New Warriors, What If. What was happening here is I came from a small town in Quebec, that's in Canada, and it just seemed like it was a Marvel town. Now, remember, in 91, I would have been 10 years old. I was too young, so I was still getting allowance money. I'd get like maybe $5 a week to spend on comics, which is maybe 3 or 4 or 5 comics at $1.25 a piece. Because I was in a small town and you basically relied on the corner store to buy your comics. 1 month and there was Silver Surfer number 12. There was no guarantee next month you'd be able to pick up Silver Surfer number 13 or 14. You just picked up whatever came. So that was the extent of my comic book collecting. Wherever I was buying my comics, they didn't really stock DC. They stocked maybe Batman and Superman. And that's it. So, you know, Armageddon 2001, I didn't know about that till many years later after the fact. So, and truth be told, I probably would have, if I could do it all over again, I probably would have stuck with Marvel because that, it was really good at that time. X-Men was starting to get heated up. So Spider-Man too. What else? What If? I was buying What If. Like it was a good time for comics. And that's what all the kids in my neighborhood collected as well. If we're going to trade and talk comics, they're buying Punisher and Ghost Rider. Like this is, you were the odd speaker like DC. Now that I'm yeah, I can go back and track down stuff, and that's what happened. So,
well, let's go and talk about this issue actually here. So this, we're looking at Hawk World Annual number 2.
Yes.
This was covered in 1991, but it was on sale June the 25th of 1991 for the cover price of $2.95.
Which was kind of hefty. That for if you get $5 a month, $5 a week, that's like you get an annual and another comic. So, I mean, you have to really like Hawk World in order to get that one.
Yeah, very much so. This was edited by Mike Gold. The title of this issue is called Racing Against Time. This was written by John Ostender. The artist was Gary Zapsik. Letter was Ken Lopez. Colors was Samuel Parsons. The cover was done by Graham Nolan. And this was reprinted Hawk World Annual number 2, a variant cover in 1991. The synopsis for this, our story starts out with Wave Rider recapping his origin once again. On page 6, we find Hawkman and Hawkwoman flying above Chicago, fighting a man known as Ricochet. After a few ages of fighting, they finally take the man down, hard. We find out that they were testing some new jetpacks created by Sunderland Corporation. As a man known as Windsor drives away, we find out that Sutherland was behind Ricochet. Afterward, we get some more backstory. We find out the Hawk Woman's recently deceased boyfriend, Jonesy, was also a partner with their cop friend, Andrea. The Hawks kid around with Ambassador Draw, who's ready to take a friend's daughter to her high school prom. Wave Rider enters the building, disguises himself as Ambassador Garl, hushing a young black boy who sees us. Wave Rider then attacks Hawkman, saying that they are linked. If he looks at one, he can look at both. Finally, on page 19, we start with Wave Rider looking at Katar's past, and then by page 22, we're finally looking to the future. This is a future where he's married to Mavis Trent, who's a supporting character in the Hawk World book, who's running for Congress. After a little squabbling, Katar goes to a restaurant owned by his ex-partner. The two talk and decide to unretire Hawkman. Katar breaks the news to his wife and her manager. Her manager, Mr. Martinez, doesn't take it too well, feeling that him being Hawkman will interfere with Mavis's run for Congress. Mavis tells Martinez that she's staying with her man on this.
He's just a man. Stand by your man. Give him to arm the plaintiff. a cold and lonely.
At a press conference, we find Hawkman and Hawkwoman giving an interview. Smashing a TV, we find Julie Crystal, the daughter of an old Hawkman foe, Attila. She rushes off, nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake, to talk to her father's old shell. The shell wakes up and absorbs Julie into it. Julie slash Attila monologues about how she needs to continue her father's business, and she flies off. We then catch up with the Hawks as they're battling some crooks. We find out from Hawkwoman that Ricochet's knees gave out and he died as a junkie. As the duo are resting, they find Attila destroying the Art Institute. They do a little fight and discover that Attila is planning on destroying the planet with its warp drives after it kills Hawkman. Julie's husband shows up with her body. Katar forces Julie out, back to her body, and then takes control of Attila's body. Wave Rider Cat watches, wondering if this is when Hawkman will become Monarch. Hawkman flies the shell into space, causing it to explode, moments after it escapes back to his own body. Monarch realizes that Hawkman isn't going to become Monarch and erases Katar's memory of the night. Shara shows up and the two have a little talk. We end with an epilogue showing a man finding the Attila shell. So that's the synopsis for this. Let's go ahead and start like I normally do with the cover. So Justin, what are your thoughts on the cover of this Hawkworld annual?
Okay, well, we're going to look at the cover here. Oh, you want to talk about the cover or the story first?
Let's talk about the cover first. So the cover shows Attila standing over Hawkman, his arms raised above his head, Hawkwoman's in the background.
Okay, so first thing I'm going to mention that I actually, last year, the year before, I went down and tracked as much Hawkworld as I could. I managed to get the whole 32-issue series and then annuals. I managed to get these, and I read the whole thing. So this is still, Hawkworld is still fresh in my mind.
Right on.
So I especially tracked this down because Ostrander wrote it. I like Ostrander. I like Suicide Squad. I like quite a few things he's written. So this, you know, I naturally gravitated towards this. I wanted to see what kind of series it was because he sets a pretty high bar. I like Ostrander's writing. That's one thing right there. Regarding this cover, this is an anime out around June of 91 when all the other Armageddon 2001 crossovers were happening. So you got Attila on the front cover here. He became a character in Hawkworld maybe a few months later in issues 18 and 19. But this would have been the first appearance of him, of Attila. So prior to this, you know, if you're collecting this book, you would not know who that was. You might think, hey, man, that looks like Brainiac. I don't know. Regarding the cover, this is Grant Nolan who penned it. It's a good-looking cover. There's nothing wrong with it technically per se. But I'm going to rate what I hang on my wall and probably not. This is not my favorite Hawkworld cover. A favorite Hawkworld cover to me would have Hawkman and Hawkwoman doing something where you're seeing more of them. Instead, it's just Hawkworld knocked out and Hawkman's in the background. I want to see them in their glory, not getting smashed here. That's just my opinion anyways. You know, I did say I did not collect Hawkworld at the time. I didn't even know it existed at the time. But I probably would have picked up a few issues of this Hawkworld series back in 91 because I'm a Hawkman fan. But I think this series was a bit of a departure from what we were all expecting, because if you're a Hawkman fan, if you're watching him in Super Friends and you know the Joe Kubert era, and you even, you know, read the Tony Isabella Michigan series in the mid-80s, it's, you know, Hawkman with a mace and he's shirtless and he's flying around and he's doing the barbarian thing. But this is a different kind of Hawkman. He's a police officer from a different planet and he's trying to adjust to being a human and all that stuff. But in regard to the cover, I'd probably give this cover a 2 or 3, at least a 3. I mean, like I said, it's there's nothing per se wrong with it, and it's well drawn. It's just probably not my favorite layout of a cover, or, you know, the heroes are getting butchered there. So, I mean, I want to see something more glorious for her. Anyways, that's my opinion.
All right, I say we've never talked about this, but my thoughts agree a lot with what you're saying. As far as a rating, I would probably give it a 3 also. It's not a bad-looking cover. I don't know if it's because the heroes are down, I don't like it, but just something about it, like you said, it's a nice cover, but it's not worth hanging on your wall. It's not worth getting signed. It's not a fantastic cover.
If I had a big rack of comic books to choose from, and I had this cover here, I might go with something else. It's an annual, too. Like I said, it was a bit pricier at the time. And once upon a time, the annuals were just standalone stories. Now this is all crossovers. So this annual, just like part five of a 20-part story, because maybe back then I would have skipped that. But of course, it's Hawkman. So maybe at the time I would have said, no, it's Hawkman. I like Hawkman. Maybe I would have thought that was Brainiac on the cover. That'd be cool. I'd like to see Brainiac and Hawkman go at it. That'd be a good issue, but it's not. So, that's how I'm judging this. I don't know if I would have, probably would have picked an X-Men or Spider-Man title over this, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I do agree. This Attila does look a bit, especially here on the cover, does look a bit like Brainiac or maybe Metallo, one of Superman's robotic foes. So, and I was buying Hawkworld at the time. I got the Hawkworld miniseries, and then I bought the actual series when it came out. This was right after I started collecting and buying comics and got addicted. It was buying almost everything by DC and Marvel, so I picked this up. I didn't recall this being Attila's first appearance, but then again, I would let comics stack up for months at a time and read them a bunch at one time. So, but yeah, it's a nice cover, just not exceptional. So it looks like we're agreeing on the cover.
What did you think of the story?
The story itself, like you, I love John Ostrander's work. I mean, I've got four different podcasts, and two of them are talking about John Ostrander's books. So, I mean, I'm talking about Suicide Squad. I talk about The Manhunter. So, I love John Ostrander's work. And this wasn't a bad cover. Or, I'm sorry, a bad story. My major problem as I'm rereading this, as I mentioned in the synopsis, this is a 50-page story or so. 56 pages or so. We don't get to the future where Wave Rider's looking into his future until, 20 pages in.
That's true.
A third of the book is dealing with modern day and recapping Hawkman's origins. For being part of the Armageddon 2001 crossover, personally, I think John should have gotten to the whole let's look at Wave Rider's future a little sooner.
Okay.
I don't mind seeing this guy Ricochet he fights and they defeat and finding out that the Sutherland Corporation.
Let me raise the question here.
Yes, sir.
Okay, if you're reading this, if you're a 9001 fan and you're trying to pick up all the parts of the story, and you picked up this annual because it's got the Armageddon 2001 on it, after reading this, would you want to read Hawkworld? Is there enough in here to make you entice you about Hawkworld? Because that was the idea. Because you were running the whole crossover. Okay, we're getting new readers. Maybe a Hawkworld reader is going to pick this up and maybe want to get interested in the Armageddon 2001 story and then pick up more issues and find out about different teams. So they're going to be more exposure to DC. Maybe someone's following the Armageddon 2001, and since it runs through every single book we're running except for Legion, they're gonna pick up an issue of Hawkworld or Flash and realize, hey, I really like this. I think I want to go back and read more issues. So as an Armageddon 2001 fan, would you read this Hawkworld and go back and try and track down previous issues? I'll be honest, in my opinion, no. If I read this as an Armageddon 2001 fan, I'm like, well, it's a good Armageddon 2001 story. But, this there's nothing in here that really makes me want to go back and find back issues or maybe even continue with the series. That's my opinion. It doesn't sell me on Hawkworld. That's just my opinion, though.
No, that's what I got you on here for. And it's not a bad opinion. It's your opinion, so it can't be wrong. It's what you think. But,
yeah. Again,
I read this series as it came out, so it's a little harder for me to say that. But I do have to agree with, well, I'm undecided. I'm on the fence on it. I mean, yep. We got this lingering plot line. There's something going on in Sutherland, like I said, in the first part of the story that sets up some stuff. Well, makes you kind of curious what's going on with them. So I'm on the fence. And again, it's hard for me to detach myself from who I am because I am more of a DC fan. I read this book when it came out. So I think I would swing towards yes, I'd want to read more and pick up the series.
Right.
But that's coming from someone that read the series when it came out. And I know in my mind, even though I'm trying to detach this from the rest of the series, I know some of the good stuff going on in the series. And also, as we talked about earlier, being a John Ostrander fan, that definitely gives it bonus points for wanting to check out the rest of the series. But having said that, I can see where you're coming from.
Now, if I'm reading as a Hawkeye fan, I like the concept. I like the idea of Wave Riders going to every single DC character to try and feel out who might be the future monarch, right?
Right.
So if I was a Hawkworld reader and I picked up this annual, I might be like, this actually sounds a little cool. There's some time traveling stuff. There's You know, I probably want to look up the rest of Armageddon 2001 soon. I might, you know, try to pick up, back then they didn't have trade paperbacks, unfortunately, but I mean, maybe I try to pick up another annual or two. Essentially, they're all supposed to be what if type stories where, you know, it's like an alternate reality. Right. You probably covered a few of the other issues with their guests for Superman. Well, I don't know if it's funny, but one where he hooks up with Maxima, right? Because Lois Lane died, so he ends up hooking up with Maxima.
And yeah, we haven't talked about that. I think that's the one we haven't talked about yet.
Okay, so I'll keep that quiet. But, you know, so I thought those were kind of good. And in a sense, I kind of wish, you know, if John Ostrander had a carte blanche here to just do whatever the hell he wanted. Sorry for language. He could have, you know, really done something different here, a different kind of Elseworlds story with getting more extreme. But it seemed like in his series, he kind of wanted to keep Hawkman out of the rest of the DC universe. So you're not seeing, I think the only classic Hawkman villain you see in his Hawkworld series is Shadow Thief. Other than that, though, you're not seeing, I think there was what? Lion Mane? Am I getting that wrong? He's like a lion bird type villain. I can't remember.
I think you're. I know there was also there's the Nanhawks.
Gentleman Ghost was in here. Attila was created by John Ostrander for the series. Never went anywhere. I think there was Count Viper, who was created by John Ostrander for the series. That never went anywhere either. There was Ricochet, who you mentioned in the beginning part of this story. That was created for the series. We don't hear about him anymore. And I think there might be a few others characters, but it seems like John Ostrander was just trying to keep this Hawkworld series kind of separate from everything else, because you didn't see Batman and Superman poking in regularly. It was just, and you know, sometimes I wonder if Armageddon 2001, it was, you know, an editor with a gun to John's head saying, listen, you have to write an annual and you have to make it an Armageddon 2001 tie-in, so do so.
Well, having read some of their annuals and talking about them, some of the annuals come across that way. This one comes across that way. The New Titans, which we talked did last month with Clinton Robinson and Tom, that very much comes across as one of the main editors saying, hey, you guys need to include your annual in with the Armageddon 2001. So they kind of took an annual that he had planned, threw a couple pages beginning and the end, and said, here you go. So, yeah, some of the annuals come across that way. Some are a little more, a little better, like they were willing to do it, and others, like you said, it seemed like the editor had a gun to their head saying, you know what? You got to do it this month. Got to do this one.
So, I mean, you know, because Ostrander could have went a little more crazy and wild. It's an alternate future timeline, which means it'll never happen. So, I mean, you know, we could have had an alternate future timeline, but Ostrander, where Hawkman kills everyone. I mean, you know, he could have went everywhere, but instead he introduced this character he'll be reintroducing in a few months in the regular series. He just, no, there's a good chance to bring in Attila. Maybe he's just, oh, I got to use this. I got to use someone. I need a villain. I don't want to use a CU villain. I'll just use my own. That happened here. But I like the whole, in hindsight, I like the whole concept of Armageddon 2001. I like the idea that there was, well, this will probably be, yeah, we'll keep going. I'll talk to you about this later.
So what do you think about the art on this book? What are your thoughts
on that wise? I like Graham Nolan. Here, let me just, I got my issue right here with me. Let me just check real fast. I have no qualms with the art. I think the art's, yeah, I have nothing extremely negative to say or positive. Positive. It's good. I mean, it's not nothing I'm going to pin on my wall, but I mean, it's good, you know.
Yeah, I agree with the art. The art on this, the actual story was done by Gary Kuzapik?
Yes.
Graham just did the cover. I agree with you on the art. It's not the best art I've ever seen, but it's serviceable. You can tell who the different characters are. When the few times heroes do show up in here, we can tell who the characters are. We can tell the difference between Hawkman and other characters. So I do agree with you that while it's not maybe the best, it is good.
It's good. It's not standout. It's not so standout. We'll be talking about it like we're not talking about it now. 30 right. years. But I mean, it's good. You know, it's not. It was not. It wasn't atrocious or something. You said, wow, that was really bad. It was like, okay, this is good. Story moves along. And you can figure out who's who. You know, it's some action scenes. It's good. It's good.
One thing I do like about this that you kind of already touched upon, John introduced this villain Attila first here. And then, I mean, he could have used another villain that he's already had introduced, but he decided to introduce the villain here and then actually have him first show up in continuity-wise a couple issues later. I think that was kind of nice and kind of maybe a brave thing for him to do to bring this, to use this as to introduce a new villain.
Well, yeah, you know, he's throwing some ideas in there. It's a good issue, and if I've reading this, I'd probably want to check out the rest of Armageddon 2001, and I'd still keep reading Hawkworld because I'm already familiar with it. So,
did you have any other thoughts on this issue?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up. I mean, I had to dig it out once you said you want to talk about it. It's not sitting anywhere near me, but it's, you know, my treasured pile collection is just kind of like out in the long box somewhere. So
right.
I guess that answers your question right there.
Yeah, I guess it pretty much does. Let's say I don't think I have much more thoughts on this. I say it was a good issue. It was serviceable for the crossover and for Hawkman, in my opinion. I know as a Hawkman, story wasn't going to be great for you because it wouldn't cause you to go out and buy the series. I'm a little more on this side of the fence, so I would say it's a serviceable story. Not, in my opinion, again, covering two of John's other books, and I've talked about some of his other series elsewhere. It's not one of his best writings, I don't think. I think he does a lot better job than this normally.
It's the whole Hawkgirl thing. You know, he inherited something with a really messy continuity. That's the size of it. Like, after Crisis, they're supposed to kill off Hawkman, and they're talking about rebooting him, and then there was something about, let's reboot him so that the Hawkworld three-issue series happens in the past, and then, you know, it kind of catches up with normal continuity, and they say, no, let's make it present day.
Right.
You know, messed up, like, you know, a good 30 years of history in Hawkman, because they're trying to say, well, if he just has, how about that other guy and that other guy? And so this is something Ostrander had to correct. So not only did he have to fix this while he was reading it, but he had to make a good story. And you can tell, like, when you're reading Hawkworld, it's not like a traditional, conventional superhero story. It's there's a lot of political. John Ostrander's got a lot of stuff going on in there about, there's a lot of sub teams about, you know, how the system works in America and the judicial system. And like Attila, he's the Christian fundamentalist robot. Like, his whole MO is to, you know, that's something else that, I don't know if we're going to talk about this out here, but I mean, that's another thing that, it looks like John had little veiled messages about, you know, Christianity or fundamentalism or something, you know, that's something that was going on in the series. And that's why I don't think Hawkgirl is a big hit for that. I think it was for more of a mature, it was obviously a mature reader's title because there's no Comics Code Authority stamp on the comic books. So it's meant for mature readers.
Right.
And it dealt with a lot of adult themes or more sophisticated themes. You know?
Yeah, that's a very good thought. I didn't think about it that way. Yeah, his book was, and thinking about it that way, it is a little funny that they included this.
There was a lot of political intrigue in this series. I don't know if you remember that, because there's, yeah. You know, there are the Thangarians and they come to Earth. You know, there's always something going on in the background. There's some wheeling and dealing going on in Kanjuro's back, but he's not like a world conqueror. He's like a bureaucrat.
Right.
And, you know, none of Hawkman's classic villains are showing up except for Shadow Thief, who doesn't look anything, who's very different from the traditional Shadow Thief. And yeah, so it almost seemed like, you know, they just said, hey, John, you can do whatever you'd like with this. And he said, you know, I'd like to create, because, you know, you got to say there's kind of a John Ostrander was trying to create his own universe almost, because Firehawk appears in this, and she was last seen in Firestorm.
Right.
He had her, a whole issue was dedicated to her, and she had some ongoing stuff, and the Sutherland Corporation, I'm pretty sure that started in a John Ostrander title. So that's something else he was continuing, because, you know, he had Suicide Squad and Checkmate.
And he had Firestorm also.
Firestorm. So I think Captain Atom, sometimes there was a bit of a crossover there, I think, because the Sutherland Corporation only appears in some books.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned in the story, it's mentioned early on, and that the Sunderland Corporation are making them wings or trying to get their technology or something like that. So, you know, he was trying to keep it contained here.
And yeah, that's one thing John was good at, was crossing over the stories, or not necessarily stories, but the elements. Like, say, Sunderland Corporation crossed over, and characters would cross over back and forth between books he wrote. I see he was writing Firestorm. Actually, Firestorm may have been, I'm not sure Firestorm was canceled at this point, or if it was near the end, but yeah, he was writing Firestorm, so he brought Firehawk in, and when he was writing, I think, Suicide Squad and Firestorm at the same time, he would cross characters back and forth. So yeah, he was good at using the characters he was writing across all his different books.
Exactly. So, I mean, that might have turned off a Hawkman fan who was used to Hawkman, who flew around with a mace, like, hitting people and solving Egyptian missing treasures or whatever. Like, this is my... If you're a fan of the Justice Society or All-Star Squadron Hawkman, you probably wouldn't have liked this book. I liked it for that reason. I thought it was a really cool... He's like a military Hawkman. He's got machine guns, and he flies around, and, you know, he's a cop. Like, he... Anyways, but that's something about this series that kind of stands out.
Oh, very much. And I didn't really, because again, I didn't get into comics until 87, 88. So we didn't see much of that Hawkman, except for like in the Justice League, International, things like that. So I wasn't attached to him. I did remember from the Super Friends cartoons and the few issues here and there I've read on and off, but I like this Hawkman. Like I say, I've said before on Facebook posts and elsewhere that main problem with the Hawkworld series was, like you said, all they would have to do is slap on the first issue, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, whatever it was, and then it would have fit perfect in the continuity. But seeing how they didn't, it kind of made a big mess of Hawkman. So,
well, they're always trying to catch up or trying to fix it up. I mean, and again, like this, some writers just get the raw end of the stick and they're just like, here's a project, please fix this. And it's like, okay, it happens. I mean, that's happened to Dan Mishkin with Wonder Woman. He was writing Wonder Woman in the 80s just before Crisis hit. And, you know, he had 2.5 years on the book, and he was trying to fix all the problems that happened with him beforehand. And I don't think fans were happy with the conclusion. So that's just said, let's just talk one on one and restart her again with George Perez. So,
any other thoughts on this issue?
No. To conclude, I mean, that's pretty much everything. It's the Hawkworld series as a whole. I like Hawkworld, and I thought it was really intelligently written. No, I thought this issue was, you know, serviceable. Like you said, that's probably the key word here. And it would probably get me interested. Yeah, I read this and want to read more Armageddon 2001 crossover. So that's my final thoughts on this annual.
Before I go, let me go ahead and if someone wants to hear more about you and see your writings and what you got going on, where can they find more about you at?
Oh, we have a website called DCintheEighties.com, and we have our Facebook page, also the same thing. And we have a Twitter account, which is also the same name, as DC in the 80s. And then we have an Instagram, and then we're working on a third zine right now. Mark Belkin, my co-editor, he and I are working on our third fanzine. If you don't know, you can just email us or you know, comment on our Facebook, and we'll send you a copy. We'll figure out how to get you a copy. It's just one of those 80s, you know, very do-it-yourself zine, but it's a fanzine, and we post interviews and original art and stuff. We only have three. We're working on a third one. We're just so busy with other projects in real life that we can't dedicate more time to this. But no, we're enjoying that. That's what's keeping us busy right now.
Well, I do have to say, I do love your website, DC in the 80s. That's a great website. That's my era. So I think you're doing a fantastic job there.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it, Aaron. Thank you.
Well, I guess I'll let you go for right now. And we'll go on to our next segment. Hold on, I'll play some promos, and I'll be right back with you.
Head Speaks. We'll be back after these important messages.
Hello, Paul. Hello, I am Dr. Herfi Staffner. Come in, please. Take a seat. What can I do for you today?
I can't sleep. I can't focus on anything. The only thing I can think about is like DC events.
DC event, as in the comic books, DC events?
Yes, the comic book events.
Ooh, interesting. Are we talking things like Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yeah, totally, that one, yeah.
Infinite Crisis?
Yeah, that one too.
Oh, very, very. Invasion, maybe?
Yeah, definitely.
The Genesis?
Not so much.
No? Oh. Okay, well, I think it's really good if you talk about the things that are troubling you in your life. So maybe you should do a podcast about this obsession.
What do you call this obsession? What do you think it is?
I think you're a unique case. I've not seen anything like this before in my office. I'm going to suggest that you have what we call DCOCD.
What? DCOCD.
You are obsessive and compulsive about your DC events. I think you should talk it out, get it out of your system via a podcast. I will help you, my friend. We shall do a podcast together about your DCOCD.
Oh, okay.
I won't even charge you for it.
Awesome. I don't think I can claim you on benefits.
Yeah, it's good.
When should we start?
I'll get back to you on that. I'll check my timetable.
Cool.
We'll be right back. Aqua Rob, Fio Shag, Lady Viper's quite the hag. Batman Jones, Lady Cop, Satin Satan smoking hot. The Fortress of Solitude, Master Villain's attitude. Nubia, Steampunk, Kid Lantern's made up. Bouncer does deflect, Astrolad to pass projects. Golden Age, Firestorm, Fireman, Pharaoh. Wonder Woman, Superman, before the crisis began. Cal, Durham, Domino, Professor Zoom, Self Cameo. Super Duper, Topo Quisp, Earth 2 Aquaman exists. Bonus page of Anti-Lad, has a phallus for a head. Superwoman and Lokai, the Crusader slipped and died. Human Squid, Flying Fish, Tira Sadie, Wiz Kids. Woozy Winks is so rotund, while I Ching's speech is quite profound. A branded name, Breakaway, so much more I have to say.
GC had started with Who's Who. Zoom Yukinori's addendum has built such momentum. He had to start the Zoom's Who. And the Earth One's long gone, the entries still go on and on and on and on and on.
Zoom's Who. Zoom Yukinori's addendum to the definitive directory of the DC Universe. Part of Who's Who in the DC Universe, the Loose Leaf Edition. A very proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Adolescents this generation have no respect and are a far cry from my sweet Jane Eyre and her friend Helen Burns. Why, just this afternoon I was
Stella.
Walking across, and you know what? Men too. Well,
Stella?
Serious men like the tragic Mr. Rochester and teachers, pa! They're all like the villainous Mr. Brocklehurst.
Hey, Stella!
Yes, Thomas?
As much as I enjoy indulging your insanity, we have a promo to record.
Oh dear, and what might that be?
That is you and I telling everyone that we have a brand new podcast out there. It's called Required Reading with Tom and Stella. Once a month, we will take a look at a single work of literature, discuss it, analyze it, and determine if it's worth its place in the canon.
Oh dear, that sounds delightful.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. And you can find us on the Two True Freaks Network, which is at twotruefreaks.com.
Oh yes, Required Reading with Tom and... Why is it Tom and Stella? Why can't it be Stella and Tom?
It rolls off the tongue better?
Okay.
Well, that was easy. So, Required Reading with Tom and Stella at twotruefreaks.com. Thanks for contributing to the promo there. You did a great job.
Oh, you are so welcome.
And now back to Head Speaks.
And welcome to this episode of...
Behind the Podcast.
Today, joining me, I have another great podcaster. Today, we have Tom Panarese.
Hey, Tom. Hey, how are you doing?
Doing good. I'm glad you could join me for this Behind the Podcast session. I've been listening to your shows, and I'm enjoying it. So I may start making my list of people I want to talk to. Tom needs to be on there. And so I'm glad I was able to get you.
Cool. Well, I'm glad to be here.
So first up, let's go ahead and, again, this show is about your podcast and behind-the-scenes type stuff. So why don't you tell us a little about your show, the name of your show, your main show, and a little bit about it.
My main show, I guess it's, I have three, but my main show, the oldest of the three, is called Pop Culture Affidavit. And the two taglines I have is one is the sworn testimony of a dork, and the other one is everything random in the world of popular culture. And it really is that. It's kind of a catch-all show where I just want to cover a topic of something that's just I want to talk about, and it would be movies, music, television, comics, you know, anything really, even more random stuff like that. And it spun out of a blog that I started back in 20 10, I think. I can't remember the exact date of my first post. That was basically the same idea, and I still put material when I remember to do so on the blog and in smaller blog posts. But the things where I'm just like, you know, this deserves like me sitting down and talking about it for an hour or having a guest on to do like a 2 or 3 hour episode. And that's it. And over the years, this will be my 6th year, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 6th or 7th year. I think I'm trying to remember my very first episode was the Baltimore Comic Con of 2012 or 2013, and I'm just trying to remember because I'm up to about episode 90 of the show because it only comes out about once a month. But I've done a couple of mini series as well contained within that, kind of like, you know, off the numbering. I did a very long series called 80 Years of DC Comics where I took a look. I think it ended up being about 15 or 16 episodes, or maybe 18, where I went through a ton of different genres that DC published in its 80 year history other than superheroes. And I think the very last episode was where Shag and I sat down and did showcase number 100, which kind of encapsulated like the whole thing. So I did like Westerns and romance and comedy and crime and horror and, you know, science fiction. I did like Star Trek and movie tie-ins. And then about a year or a few months after that ended, I picked up for about a better part of a year from the fall of 2016 into the fall of 2017. I did one called Origin Story where I reread and reviewed from off the top of my head the comics that I had bought from the fall of 86 to the fall of 87, which is my kind of first, like the first time I ever collected. And this past summer, we're recording this around Labor Day weekend of 2018. This past summer, I did a 7-part weekly miniseries called It Came from Syndication, where I took a look at a different genre of programming that appeared in syndication in the 80s and into the early 90s and talked about what was on TV. And I had my wife was on for about 3 episodes of it, and Mike Bailey was on for another one, and then I did a few solo ones. So I have a blast with that. And the blog itself is it's kind of a mishmash of those things. And I can write about commercials and movies and in comic books. From that came a desire to do I still cannot fully explain why I decided to do a podcast about the Nom, but I've done a podcast about the Nom. I have about 10 episodes left in that. I'm kind of coming up almost on 10, where it's going to be about 100 episodes, and I'm in the mid-80s or so with that, and it's called In Country. And then my third one right now is Required Reading with Tom and Stella. Stella and I are both teachers, and we both take a look at a work of literature every month. We do it where one of us chooses the next episode's book at the end of each episode. So the book, sometimes I've chosen the book, so it's kind of a book club, but we really – really evaluate the book, and then we decide like, hey, would you teach this? And that came about as something professional, like an argument I had, I think probably over Twitter with other educators, where they were kind of like poo-pooing the idea of teaching the classics. And I was like, wait a second, what about these books that we read? I mean, like, you know, there are some certain books I read in high school that I would never want to read again, but then there are other books where I'm like, I teach them now. So that's where the genesis of that idea came from. And Stella, being a voracious reader and a fellow teacher, it fit really, really well.
Very nice. And yeah, I definitely listen to a lot of the shows you've talked about. I listened to your syndication episodes, and I enjoyed all those. I got to the last one, Baywatch. I'm like, you know, I wasn't a fan of Baywatch. I watched it once in a great while at a friend's house just to ridicule it. But, you know, I've listened to the other 6 episodes. I've got to listen to this one to finish it. The whole collector mentality in me. I've got to listen to this one to finish it. I'm like, wow, that was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I mean, like, it was one of those things where I've covered so many random different topics that, like, it makes total sense that I would do an episode about Baywatch. I was going to do one anyway. And so that's when I tacked it on. And then I did I had enough feedback to kind of warrant that feedback section of the back half of the episode. But, like, you know, I deliberately chose those episodes because that was like I might have watched the show for about 2 years, and I like religiously, but I like made it appointment television for that, like maybe the first half of that season. And then it was basically from there, I was like, kind of would, if it was on, I might watch it. But, you know, but yeah, it was fun to do. The movie was odd.
Yes, I haven't watched the movie.
It was free for streaming on Amazon, so I was like, all right, well, I don't have to pay for this. I'll watch it.
Yeah, see, I don't like a lot of these movies that they take a more of a serious show and turn it into a comedy movie. I just don't care for that. I like comedy, but I don't know. So I started watching the 21 Jump Street. I'm like, no. The Will Ferrell, what was that? Land of the Lost.
I heard of that. I've heard good things about that Jump Street movie, but I love the show so much. And I have all of the show. I have every season of the show on DVD that I'm like, I think I'll just stick to this. Because the show was funny at times, too. It was that Stephen J. Cannell thing that was like, it had its humor and it was fun to watch. So.
Yeah, I didn't watch it religiously. But I did watch on a regular basis. I see Jump Street. Watch this Jump Street. It's a good show.
Yeah.
So you said you had your blog, and then from there you started doing the podcast off of there.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with the idea for your blog? What prompted you to start doing
it? Half of it came from what was a very kind of long history of me writing like this, and the other half was me deciding to rip off Mike Bailey. Believe it or not, this goes back to high school, and I'm 41. I was born in 77, so I went to high school in the early to mid 90s, and I graduated in 95. And in 94, as my senior year, I was the editor in chief of the paper, the student paper, and out of whatever reason, decided to like have a column in that paper. I think part of it was because we just needed something to be put on that page. So I started writing, I think we came out every month or something. So I started writing columns, and they were about random topics, usually trying to type in pop culture. Sometimes they tied in things that like we would be talking about at school, things like that. And then I would go on to college and eventually became the sports editor for my college paper. And again, we were strapped for writers and we were strapped for content. We were always trying to fill like the back four pages of the paper without having to like resort to a half page PSA or something for something. So I came up with the idea of like, let's have me and the other sports editor said, let's do a column where we rotate. And so I turned my first column in, and it wasn't even like a sports commentary column. It was just kind of like a slice of life essay that somehow connected to sports, kind of like something along the lines of like a Dave Barry, because Dave Barry was like still pretty big back in the early 90s, or like they're going all the way back to like the old days of E.B. White and some of the other essayists. He never really turned in a piece, so I just kept writing them. And then when I became the editor, the chief of the paper, I moved it to the features section because I was starting to have having trouble coming up with these really kind of fun things to talk about and tying them into sports. So I basically was called, the original column was called From the Nosebleeds, and I kept the, the cheap seats kind of metaphor. And I kept that going through the 4 years, 3.5 years I wrote it. So I had this backlog of stuff. And then I had a website and blog for a number of years, from about 2001 to 2007, I think it was. It's no longer in existence because I was paying for it. And once I was done with it, I took it down so I didn't have to pay for it. It was called The Name Crap. And it was basically more of the same. It's a lot of what you see on Pop Culture Affidavit, where it's just me. Sometimes it was like personal essays, and other times it was like, pop culture related or whatever. And it was a little bit of a blog, almost like Live Journal-y at times as well. And because this was back when Live Journal actually was, something. And it was like, I never really did make it as a like professional paid writer, even though I've tried here and there over the years, and so I still have my day job. But this is me just kind of indulging the fact that I always wanted to be a writer and always wanted to write. So I had taken a little bit of time off from it, and I had another blogger site, whatever I was doing in 2008 and 2009. And I started listening to podcasts because I had gotten an iPod, and some of the first that I listened to were From Crisis to Crisis. I was listening to like Smodcast and a few others as well, but From Crisis to Crisis was the first kind of like of this group that, we all kind of belong to in various circles. And because it was Mike and Jeff, and they were covering all the Superman stuff from the Crisis, et cetera. And I was like, this is really cool, because I've read a lot of this and I can follow it, and I don't have to feel like I'm falling behind, because I tried to listen to like Raging Bullets and some of those others, and I wasn't really keeping up because I had just had a kid, so I really couldn't afford comics all the time, you know. So going back and listening to all these back issues, that led me to like Back to the Bins and the Two True Freaks shows, and it also led me to Views from the Long Box, and I'll never forget it because this was I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia, and one winter we had two enormous snowstorms that dumped 3 feet on top of us each time. And that was around the time that Mike was doing his lead up to episode 100, where he was doing like his entire autobiography via comics. And that's what I shoveled snow to for like days. I was like, it was great. And by the end of it, I'm like, you know, I could do this. I should pick this up again. And I was like, well, I could podcast. And I was like, well, let me just start blogging again. And I came up with, I was like, I'll call it Pop Culture Confessional. And I think I Googled that and it was taken. I was like, well, affidavit. So I came up with the idea. I went to WordPress. I got the site. And my very first post was about the movie Megaforce, which is the logo on the website, one of the website or the Facebook group or the Twitter feed or something is my, you know, this old Megaforce comic book ad is my logo. And then from there, I was just like, I have this list that I generated. I keep in a notebook and I cross things off. And it was just basically a dump of things from my childhood or whatever, you know, movies and all this shit. I was like, okay, let's do this. And then eventually I just got the idea that, like, you know, I have certain things that I absolutely love that I really could make a podcast out of this. So I started with a basic setup of my computer and a headset mic. I eventually upgraded to a better mic. But, you know, after a while, it was just, I think my first one was it was the Baltimore Comic Con. I want to say it was maybe 2013 because the Baltimore Comic Con is something I do every year. So it's kind of my anniversary episode. I did my second episode was It, the Stephen King novel. My third was, I think it was November Rain. And then at one point I did an episode around Christmas of December that first year. My fourth or fifth episode is about G.I. Joe and the toys. And then my two first guests were, one was my friend Shell, because we talked about the Counting Crows album August and everything after, but my other first guest was Mike Bailey. It was the first time we'd ever talked, and we did about 3 hours on the Savage Steve Holland films. And over the years, this is a joke between me and Mike, that we like see little things and bits and pieces in our own biographies, and it's like we're the same person. There's something really eerily similar.
Pop Culture Affidavit, episode 2. Yeah.
We all float down here.
Yeah, I just look at it. It was
2012. Okay, I knew it was 12 or 13. Yeah. So I had the blog for a couple of years before that. So I've been doing this for a while. I come about monthly or so. Sometimes I'll go biweekly, but I usually do about monthly.
Very nice. It's a good story. And I see a lot of yours reminds me of some of my. Before I started podcasting, I was listening to this podcast stuff. I listened to Mike and Jeffrey talking about the From Crisis to Crisis. Mm-hmm. And also Shag and Rob talking about Firestorm and Aquaman.
So. Yeah, it was Views that really sucked me in, because like I stopped listening to Smodcast pretty quickly, and some of the other more professionally produced ones I stopped listening to pretty quickly because it was just like either I couldn't keep up with them. I dropped WTF with Mark Maron years ago because I couldn't keep up, or it was just like I just kind of felt disconnected from it. Now I do still listen to some very highly rated, I guess, you know, the like Serial and Up and Vanish, like some of the true crime stuff I'll listen to.
Right.
A couple of ones that are out of like, what the heck is the name of that network? Like Crooked Media doing like Keep It and some of the politics ones and things like that. But the core ones that I listen to, like it really Views from the Long Box, and then listening to like Shag and Mike and Stella and Donovan and like Scott and Chris and like everybody, it felt, even having never even talked to them and eventually connecting to them on Facebook and stuff or on the old TTF boards, because I was part of that too, it felt like I knew these people, or like we were all sitting in the same room, or we were all at the same party, or we were all the same, like sitting in a study hall in high school or something together, or a study line in college together. And like, you know, I knew these people more than like I felt I knew like Kevin Smith or Mark Maron or somebody like that. And I really connected to them on that level. And I think it was because a lot of them are around my age too, and aren't like, you know, celebrities and things like that. Like I never got into Nerdist, for instance, because I found Chris Hardwick to be way too arrogant. And I was just like, you know, I don't really, you know, he was kind of always uphill. Kind of like it was almost always like he was into his own shtick, and I was like, yeah, I didn't really come, you know, I want to hear you interview like Kurt Loder about MTV, and I want to hear like all your like silly little things. And Kevin Smith drove me crazy on that too, But like when I hear Mike and Jeffrey talk about stuff, and I hear Mike do stuff on Views, and then Andy and Michael doing Hey Kids Comics back when that was like the whole thing, I was just like, this is kind of like, you know, this was my entertainment. It was my entertainment for like the longest time. It was great. Still is.
So when you first started, I say you had your blog, mm-hmm. and then you decided to go ahead and you wanted to talk about things. So you started doing the podcast. When you first started doing the show, what was your vision?
The idea was that I was going to make a podcast episode out of anything that was too big for a blog post. I think that was kind of my thing. So when I would do a blog post, I might cover a movie, or I might talk about a TV show, or I might like randomly talk about a commercial here or there. But I started making topics. It was like, you know what? I could really talk about this, or it really loaned itself well to like an audio thing. So like in talking about an album or something, I could go through the album and play clips of the songs and stuff. Or it might be something thinking about the audience that I might be serving. Cause by then I had known a few people I could like kind of, push it on Facebook or whatever. I was like, okay, people might actually be interested in this more than, say, just this random blog post about, I'm trying to think of some of the topics that I covered, like American Ninja or something. So over the years, it became, the coverage of the Baltimore Con became kind of one of my things for a little while. And actually being part of Two True Freaks gets me a press pass every year. But it's just kind of one of those nice little things. I have my little press badge and I can go around. I'll interview a couple of creators here and there. But then from there, it kind of ballooned into where I was writing less about the blog, or maybe more personal stuff for some of the blog posts, where it was like, here's this thing, and here are a lot of my memories, my backstory with that thing. Like, I think, God, a few years ago, I wrote a blog post about lawn darts and how, like, so because I was one of those things on my list, and it was just basically, it's almost like this whole thing about how my friends and I used to play all these games that, like, are now completely outlawed because somebody got killed doing it at one point. Or like it was like how we used to play with like those Enertech rifles and things like that, and like, so kind of coming up with this, like, I remember this, and like these are kind of my memories with it, and that was the idea for the blog. And with those podcast episodes, at least originally, and kind of going along, it really did become more of like, all right, this is something kind of everybody can connect to, and I can give a little bit of my own history with it as well. But I've got enough; it's got enough meat on its bones that I can fill like an hour, 45 minutes, or an hour and a half on it. And then as more and more people were listening to it, and I got to know more and more people, having guests on, there was a span. There were a couple of spans in there where, like, if you look over the course of a year, I had maybe a handful of episodes where I did them solo, and I had a lot of episodes where I had a guest on. So that, and it wasn't even deliberately planned that way. I was like, hey, I'm going to talk about 1994 in comics. I'm going to have Mike on, or, Amanda, my wife, came on for, right. my wife and I have done a number of episodes together, and that's where the fun was. In 2014, I decided to do an entire year's worth of shows about 1994, because I called it the most important year of the 90s. And with the exception of a couple of episodes that year, like the Baltimore Con episode, and there was like one episode about the summer of 99 and movies that came out in the summer of 99, just about every episode was about 1994. And that ranged from me and Mike talking about comics to look at Pulp Fiction. I think, what else did I talk about? Amanda and I sat down and did like one of the only commentary. I've done like two commentaries in the entire history of the show. One was for Weekend at Bernie's early on. So there is a, if you want to pop in Weekend at Bernie's, I have a commentary episode on Weekend at Bernie's. It's just me. But then Amanda and I sat down and watched the episodes of Mad About You, Friends, and Seinfeld that aired like around Thanksgiving of 94. And we just sat and watched them and talked over them. So it was one of the, and we had fun doing it because it was so odd to watch these shows like 20 years later. And then I did like a two-parter of my so-called life, which is something that I really, really enjoyed, because I got like five or six people on there for the second part of it, where we just talked about our fan experiences. So getting to really stretch the boundaries of what I can do audio wise has been something that's really, really fun about this, because since I'm not held to a format, and I'm not held to, like, within country, it's an index show. So the exception of specials, where I cover like a movie about Vietnam, I had Luke, Jack, and Eddie on for First Blood and Rambo. But for the most part, it's like intro, synopsis, a little bit of historical background on the on what happened around that month of the Vietnam War, and then kind of letters and ads, and so it's kind of tight and it's kind of really set. They're really easy to put together that way. With this, I can really just, like, okay, what do I want to do? sometimes it causes an episode to not come out for a little while, especially if life gets in the way. But then I come up with, like, you know, hey, I'm going to do 7 episodes in syndication, and just, like, you know, that I don't know how the guys who do it weekly and put it out weekly do it, because it was like, I wasn't completely burned out by the end of all of it, but it was a lot. You know, it was a lot of energy. It was fun as hell, but it was a lot of energy and time.
You know, it can be fun stretching your legs and doing something. Like I said, this is my I've had guests on some G.I. Joe show. I've always got guests on, but this is the first time with rotating guests like this. And then episode 21 of my G.I. Joe podcast, I had like seven extra co-hosts on, just to try something different. You know, it's always interesting. So I definitely see where you're coming from.
Did you have them on all at once?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Because when I did my so-called life, I had originally thought I'll do it all at once, and then like I started looking into the logistics of it, because I've been part of a listserv for my so-called life since, I mean, the listserv is kind of half dead. I mean, it still technically lives, but like nobody really uses it, but since the 2000. So I had friends and we were all like, I posted to a couple of people and somebody was like, you know, think about the logistics of this and how we're all in different time zones and some of us are in England. I was like, yeah. So what I did was I just recorded like 5 or 6 different segments. And for me, like the biggest part of that was the fact that, And people listening to this might not know who Sarah Bunting is, but she's one of the people who runs the Previously.tv site. And she was one of the creators of the old website Television Without Pity. And I got in touch with her and she agreed to come on and talk about her fandom for my so-called life. And I was like, that for me, that was a big get, because I've been reading her stuff and her blog since like 2001 or something. So, and then like some of my personal friends were on there, but yeah, I remember just doing that and then being like recording these segments and then editing it together. And like in retrospect, I probably should have divided even that up to 2 shows, because I think it's like a 4-hour show.
It's yeah, not sometimes they get out of hand.
It's not Stella's, like, I think Stella did like a 6-hour San Diego Comic-Con show last year or something. It's nowhere near that, but it's a long one. So, but yeah, that was fun. And then these past years with doing these mini series where I got to dig into stuff that I hadn't looked at or sought out. The money I've spent on comics for some of these shows is ridiculous.
So far you got 3 different shows, and within your shows you've got these little mini segments or mini series.
Yeah.
Where do you see the show going from here? Do you plan on having more shows, or
I know that
at the max right now.
Yeah, I'm at the max right now. In Country is approaching about episode 85. There's only 84 issues of the NOM, and it would be 87 if you count the 3-part Punisher trade that came after that were 3 issues that were never published because the series got canceled. So 87 shows was not like a round number to me, so I bumped it up to 100. Saying I'm going to make 100 episodes, I'll fill in with different specials. So and I covered Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried. I covered the really big marquee Vietnam War films, you know, Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, Apocalypse Now. Jack and Eddie and I are going to do The Deer Hunter in a little bit. I've got Coming Home and Born on the 4th of July up on the slate. I've done smaller segments. I did 4 separate segments attached to the back end of a comic review episode, regular episode about China Beach. And then I went completely off topic for 1 episode, and I covered All Quiet on the Western Front. And it dropped the day of the 100th anniversary of the start of World War I. And so that was actually something that was almost like a passion episode with me. I could have made that a Pop Culture Affidavit episode, but since I was like, you know, I'm really into doing In Country. So that's going to end probably sometime next year. I may actually kind of pull back on Pop Culture Affidavit for a few months just to kind of get those in-country episodes together, you know, because it's at least the comic review ones together, and just at least get kind of backed up, especially the school year also just started. So, you know, so when that's done, I'll have to – I've punted around ideas for other ones, but I almost like – because the required reading podcast is monthly. If you really want to be honest about it, it's almost every other month. I'm doing the heavy lifting because I edit all of my episodes and Stella edits. Like when I pick the book, I edit the episode and I host the episode and vice versa with Stella. So I don't see that ending until the two of us can't do it anymore. Like, if something completely gets in the way of the two of us being able to read a book every month and sit down and talk about the book every month, go, you know, unless we just start hating each other. But
Shag affects L too much.
Shag starts inviting himself on our show. But I love Shag to death, and we give him so much crap. But
he's a great guy. I love him.
So I see that. I almost see that as almost like a separate venture. But with Pop Culture I'm David, like, once In Country ends, I'm like, yeah, I could probably do more. I just, it's one of those things where I don't think I'll ever really run out of topics, because every once in a while I think I have run out of topics. So I'll take a step back from the show because I've got enough coming out, or I'll throw a few blog posts up just to keep content going. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I could do this, 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 and this. And there are a few episodes I put off because I started outlining them. I'm like, wait, I want to do this right. And I put it off until I have the time to work on it. So at the moment, when In Country ends, in the very least, I will just keep Pop Culture After David going, and I might see what else is out there that I might want to do. If it was a comics related thing, it probably would be. Or a movie related thing or something like that. But the frustrating thing about being a comics podcaster is that you're starting to get to the point where I think everything has been covered. And I'm like, how can I do, like, I have toyed with the idea of a new Teen Titans podcast. And because I did a blog series on Pop Culture Affidavit, like right around when I began the blog, and it lasted for a while. It's a separate tab on the site called My Life as a Teen Titan, where I started with issue 71 and I went to issue 130, and I did a lot of that. So I've kind of already covered it. But every time I think about what I would do and how I would do it, it would be massive. And I'm like, I don't think I have the time. it's I keep kicking it down the road because I'm like, hey, I think somebody else is already doing the new Teen Titans somewhere. And I don't remember who, but I think there's one or two episodes. I feel like Tighten Up the Defense or something is one of those shows, or Teenage Wasteland or
something like that.
And I haven't listened to it, and I apologize if they're listening. So I'm like, all right, I don't want to step on those toes. But even then, I'm like, if I do it, I'm going to do it in a way that, like, it's going to take up an enormous amount of time. So, and it's going to be like a From Crisis to Crisis level thing where there's like 20 years of comics to cover. So it's kind of something that, yeah, but no, from there, I don't know. There's a lot in the air of like what I could possibly do, because I'm always kind of like rediscovering things doing this podcast and this blog. You know, I wouldn't have thought of doing the syndication show a few years ago. I had like some of those shows I had on my list of, oh, I could write a blog post about They Came from Outer Space or, right, you know, or Baywatch or something like that. But then I was like, I started putting it together. I'm like, no, I could do a whole mini series on syndication. I'm like, you know, maybe I make that a thing, like where every year I do like one set of episodes for the summer or something. So, you know, what my kind of firing on every cylinder brain sometimes comes up with. So
yeah, same way with me. And like that, when I first started talking about doing the RV in 2001, I mentioned on that group that we're all on, uh-huh, Facebook, and someone's like, well, people have already done some things like that, but you know what, it doesn't hurt to have someone else's, you know, thoughts on it and a different take. So even though, you know, someone may have done a show, it doesn't hurt you to, you know, if it's something you really like doing.
Yeah, it can be tough when it's something that's very popular and people have opinions on it, or people are like, they'll want to fansplain stuff to you because you missed something.
Right.
And I found that with Batman. I remember I did Andy Leyland and I did The Cult, the Jim Starlin, Bernie Wrightson.
Right.
It's actually an episode of the show that I'm really proud of, because it's one of the few I've ever scored, and I just really wanted to see what that was like. And he and I had a great conversation, and we talked about the fact that this came out right before I started reading Batman. So I kind of went back and read it, but how by the time he got to Nightfall, they had kind of buried it, you know, because if you see some of the stuff in The Cult and some of the stuff in Nightfall and then No Man's Land down the line, there's a lot of similarity. And I don't know if they were pulling from that well or not, but it was kind of like, you know, all of a sudden this really isn't in continuity anymore, because how many times is it going to happen? So Andy made that comment. I was like, yeah, you know, you're right, because by the time I had really been into Batman, The Cult was not something that was mentioned. It was something that you would see in back issue bins. You would see it on the wall of a comic store. The trade came out. So like almost immediately we start getting these, I started getting these emails or comments on the Facebook. Well, actually, I'm like, oh my God. Like I even to the point where I started calling it bat-splaining, because it was just like, and I haven't really, I don't think I've, with the exception of maybe a segment here or there, I've rarely talked about Star Wars, and I love Star Wars. I have my Star Wars story episode. I got to Scott Rifen before the really famous people started coming on. But so many people do Star Wars. Like True True Freaks has an entire show, or even has had entire shows about Star Wars. So I'm like, I don't really need to cover, unless I can find like a really good angle for it, I don't really need to cover Star Wars. And Trek's kind of the same way. I did something on one of the DC comics because it was part of the DC thing I was doing. I grabbed the Star Trek book to read and talk about. And I have plans to have Gene Hendricks on and just sit down and talk with him about like 80s Star Trek and the Star Trek movies and the novels and stuff and our experiences with them. So it's more of like a my Star Trek story type of thing. But even then, like how there are a lot of Star Trek, it's just like really well-worn territory. So I do find myself going for the stuff. If it's a well-worn subject that maybe somebody hasn't grabbed yet, like I did a Wonder Woman. There are a couple of Wonder Woman podcasts out there now. I did one episode of Wonder Woman. I covered the two Legend of Wonder Women series. One that was came out like right after the Crisis, the Trina Robbins, Kirk Busiek one. And then the one that came out about a year or two ago.
Yeah. About that one for my daughter.
Yeah. It's good. It's really good.
Yeah.
And so I haven't done a lot of, and I've done the occasional, I find myself with a lot of the comic stuff, trying to find angles and stuff that people have already done. Like when I know you, like you have the whole G.I. Joe things. And when I did Origin Story, I covered, I think it was like 55 and then 59 through 66.
Right. Because, yeah. I listened to those.
Yeah.
I saw it was G.I. Joe. So I had to listen.
Yeah. And those are the ones I bought at the stand. And I mean, while I was collecting those, I went and bought back a bunch of issues the ones I could afford, which was basically about 46 onward. So I had most of them. And yearbook three is the one that has the silent story with Scarlet rescuing Snake Eyes, kind of returning the favor. And I remember on the NOM, I've actually covered issues 26 and 27 on In Country because I was able to get those in second printing years ago. And Larry Hama had written those and he was the editor of the NOM. And so I was like, well, let me just do kind of a couple of ancillary other books that have covered the Vietnam War. And I always remember, especially issue 26, being like really good. That first part of Snake Eyes.
Right.
So, but I was like, you know, I knew other people, I knew that you had covered it, covered these things, but like, I was like, well, with the origin stuff, I'm like, I'm kind of covering like my, like this was kind of like my experience buying it and reading it and stuff and like why I got it and stuff like that. So the Transformers was another one where I had to go buy the trade of the, because I was like, where do I get these issues? So yeah, if I'm covering comics, I'm like, okay, what's my angle? So I'll grab, like, I did two episodes earlier this year about cop comics from DC and Marvel, like Underworld and Cops, right. The Job. And I was like, nobody's covering these, so let me give it a shot. If nobody listens, nobody listens. But if you're like, you know, so if I ever see Jimmy Palmiotti, I will give him the four issues of Cops the Job to sign and see if I can get a story out of him, because he's really good with stuff like that. I gave him like three issues of the NOM and he ended up giving me like 5 minutes for In Country because he just started talking about how, yeah, inking those stories. So that's cool. Nice. Yeah.
So what's the biggest obstacle that you had with the show so far, or doing the show?
At first, it was that before I joined the Two True Freaks Network, that's kind of a silly story on its own, where I had been in Disney World. This goes back about 5 or 6 years ago. And I had been texting Scott. I was like, hey, do you want to meet up? Scott Gardner. So he came over. My parents were with me. We had dinner at the Liberty Tree Tavern, and Scott met me and my wife after dinner. We walked around, and my wife had gone off to use the restroom, and Scott's like, hey, by the way, I've always wanted to ask you, do you want to join the network? It was like we had a meeting. but before that, I think one of the bigger obstacles is the fact that I was paying Podomatic for the feed. So it was kind of like some of the logistics stuff where it was like some of the old episodes had to be dropped here and there for at least a little bit because the numbers were like dictating that I either increase my spending per month, you know. Right. In some cases, there are some episodes where I was living in our old house and my office, the spare bedroom slash office that I was recording, was right next door to my son's room, and he was a toddler and he was kind of a light sleeper when he was a toddler. So you could totally hear that I'm doing the I'm trying to talk into the mic, but I don't want to wake anybody else up voice. And you know, we all have that voice where it's like late.
Yeah.
Now we have a house where I'm in a, where there's a finished basement. So I'm sitting in a finished basement. Nobody can hear me. So I can be taught. But, and then there were periods where I don't think where I feel like I was forcing anything, but there have been periods where I think you just were like, I don't know if it's my own anxieties about stuff or what, but, or that I burn out from time to time where I just do want to take a step back and not like go on an extended hiatus, but do like kind of like, almost not do anything for a little while because I need to recharge. Or in the case of my life, my career, is that like work just becomes all consuming. And especially in some years in the past where I was in the former school I was at, I had a couple of years that were really, really rough. And in some cases doing the podcast were kind of my escape, you know, it was something like, I don't have to think about work for a couple of hours. But in other cases, it was like work got so overwhelming and other stuff got so overwhelming that I had to put this on the back burner. And so I think that was the thing that really does get in the way. I mean, out of all of the guest times I've guested and all the times I've had people on, I've only had like one experience where I would say it was a negative experience. And I'm not going to get too much into that because I don't want to, what's the expression, spill the tea? I don't know how the kids are saying these days. I don't want to talk out of school. Talk out of school is the expression I'm used to. But I did. There was one show that I was on once that I almost walked off the show because I was just like, I kind of grinned, you know, grinned and bared it. And it was fine. But no, I've always, it's been weird. This is something that I'm not used to. I didn't have a ton of friends in high school who shared this sort of geek interest with me. I had like my friend Harris and I both collected Titans. We would write into the letter columns together. My friend Jeremy was one of my movie going guys. We go see stupid, crappy horror movies every once in a while. But I had a lot of other friends who were music and sports and stuff. So it was almost like we were always these pockets of friends. But like, you know, I kind of among all these people, and I flit in and out sometimes, or you know, depending on what's going on. But like, it's still like, oh my god, there's like all these people out there like me, and we're all kind of in these communities, and that has always been so great. And I kind of seeded the idea with Rob Kelly that he should do a mental health geek episode in addition to his annual, like, look at how much weight we've lost with Gene. And I love those guys. And I'm like, but after the second Geek Fitness episode, and when he started the Facebook group, I said to Rob, and I think he might have, I could probably mention it again and he'd be like, you know, let's do it. But you know how busy Rob Kelly is with, you know,
right.
13 podcasts. But he, I said, you should do like a mental health one. Cause just thinking about that and thinking about like, you know, how healthy this is for us sometimes, especially when you've got your friends and then you go on Twitter and like, not only is like everywhere else the world's on fire, like even in within like, you know, a movie comes out and everybody tries to kill each other. And it's like, it's so exhausting sometimes in fandom. And it's like, you know, we've got our, you know, how do we combat that? So I really haven't had a lot of issues. There's some technology things that have gotten in the way in the past. I hated that headset mic. So the moment I could upgrade to the Snowball, and then there were like a few episodes of Pop Culture Affidavit where the P's are really like popping like crazy, and I finally spent the $14 on a pop filter for the microphone, and it improved it exponentially, and then I got a new computer. So the cost of things does get in the way sometimes, but I've rarely, if ever, had an issue like, you know, with sitting down, aside from maybe the occasional bout of writer's block, of sitting down and doing what I want to do, the show. And I think with Pop Culture Affidavit, I think that's because I can, it is kind of like a Views from the Long Box or a Trennis Magnus Punches Reality, or like one of those shows where it's like, you know, what do I want to cover today? And I think having that, and if I look back on all those the columns I talked about when I was in high school and college and the blogs I've had, it's like, it's an extension of that, because I don't know if I've never was I don't know if I have like ADHD or something, and I can't do it because I never was diagnosed from it. My son has it, so like I Magnus once said I was kind of like a jack of all trades, where I do have a lot of interest of varying things. Like there was never one thing. I mean, the Titans is the thing I've been the most focused on over the years, but even then it stops at a certain point. But there's like so many other things I've been a huge fan of. Like I could very well, like I was on two episodes of Long Play with Bob Fisher, and we talked about Billy Joel's The Stranger and Springsteen's Born to Run, two of my favorite albums of all time. So like things like that. So like, you know, that's the fun of doing this show, is that when I can, like, you know, and it's one of those things where like I really don't care. I care that I have an audience, but like I don't really look at my numbers, so I have no idea how many people are listening to this show. I'm just like, yeah, I'm just gonna put this out there because I have fun talking about this stuff, and I have, the research is like fun as hell, and it's and that's the beauty of doing it. Even though sometimes the editing can be a little bit of a chore, editing out all the ums and ahs and the number of times I've belched into a microphone, and so. But no, it's really, really fun. I've actually done professional development things about podcasting, and I did a very low attended panel at the Richmond Comic Con earlier this year about like getting into podcasting, what you need, kind of the equipment, kind of podcasting 101. I enjoy, it's kind of like I get to put my teacher hat on. It's kind of fun doing that too, even if I'm stealing everything from Mike Bailey.
That's why we do my show. I steal a lot of stuff from Mike Bailey and also from Shag. So It's all right.
Oh, I totally. I mean, I miss the guy. I miss Sean Engel a lot too. And if you look at the format for In Country, especially the first like maybe half of the episodes of the show, I sort of copied with his blessing a lot of the format from Just One of the Guys, where like there's bits and pieces in there where I was like looking at his show, because I was a regular listener. I was even on at least one episode, and like how he would do things, and I'm like, yeah, that's a good place to put this, this, and this, and that's where I would do it. It made that show really easy to produce, so I owe a lot to him. So it's still a loss I think we all feel too.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, and then like I said, Scott and Chris, and it's just, and listening to some of the more wacky stuff some of the guys have done over and girls have done over the years, like when Chris and Magnus did all the conspiracy stuff, and like, you know, or just some of that stuff where I'm just like, yeah, you're kind of scratching an itch there for me, and and remembering to write into some of these things and being like, hey, you know, here's a letter, because. I think Paul Spataro said it best. Like, once you get to know everybody, you stop writing into the podcast because you feel like you've talked to them about it, and you're like, oh wait, I forgot to write a letter to put it on air. And that happened with Mike and Andy and people like that too.
Yeah, I'm bad at that writing. I plan on writing an email about your recent. Well, I say recent syndication show. I was going to write in about that, and then I get busy. I usually listen to the podcast when I'm going to and from work, so I can't really. Write notes at that point, so by the time I get home, I forget to do it.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Like, you mentioned that. I like that show. I like, you know.
Yeah. There are some shows, there were a couple of Alan's shows that like, and some that Don have done, that I literally was probably like doing the dishes while listening to them, and I'd stop and I grabbed like a post-it and I was literally writing notes on it, and I have like two or three post-its, and I'd eventually compose an email. Yeah. Because you feel like it's weird, and it's weird when somebody outside of the sort of club like mentions that they've heard your podcast, because it was just like I was at the con, was it 2 years ago? It was the Baltimore con, and I was in Chipotle with my son. We were getting lunch, and I went to the restroom, and somebody recognized the Two True Freaks podcast network. I was like, oh really? You know, we talked a little bit. I don't remember the guy's name, but I was just like, it was weird for me, because like to me, I'm like, who am I? Nobody's going to know who I am.
Yeah. Oh, you listened?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I don't have the output of like Rob or Shag or Mike or some other people who have like serious output. And Mike is hosting panels at Dragon Con,
yes,
which we're all jealous of.
Oh, very much so.
So jealous of him.
Why, I saw here again, you mentioned it was during the Labor Day weekend. I did see Mike's news broadcast he was on as the Superman expert.
Yeah, that was insane, because the closest I ever got to that was my son was in a crowd shot when they did a segment like that because he was dressed as Darth Vader years ago at the Baltimore Comic Con. So as we were lined up and everything, they pulled him and a bunch of other people to stand behind the reporter. But he's just kind of standing there, and he's in his mask. But it was kind of cool. But you know, no, I've never been interviewed for anything related to comic books or anything like that. I'm not a Superman expert. It was wild. I was like, that's so cool.
Yeah, well, I listened to that. I've talked to that guy.
Yeah. I've met that guy. He's one of the few people I've met.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So we've talked a little. You got a family. You're married. You've got children. Mm-hmm. How many kids do you have?
I just have one.
Just one. Okay. Yeah. And I know, again, one of the questions I ask is how do they feel about your podcast? And apparently your wife approves that she's been on your show. I know I've heard her on your show, so
she listens back to them when they come out, and she's like, there were two things. Is one, she's like, where did I get this twang? She's from Virginia and I'm from Long Island, and you kind of notice it. But the other thing, which is like, I keep saying the word interesting at one point, I'm like, I totally didn't notice, to be honest with you. And there was stuff that I had to cut out for some of those episodes, because at least two of them were like 45 minutes longer than they are on air, because we would go off on tangents. And I asked her to be on the syndication ones, because we had done two about music at one point. About 2016 or so, and early 2017. And they were both about music from the 90s, and I really had a great time. But the thing is, we are drinking the entire time, most of the time through those. So as you kind of get to the end of the episode, there's like one or two where the two of us, we're not completely blitzed, but we're pretty buzzed. And like, you know, so that's where it gets like really this back into a coherent conversation. And like, there's like an entire 5 minutes in the raw footage where, like, you know, both of us got up to use to the bathroom and get more to drink, and we just left the tape recorder running because I was like, I'll edit this out later. So you hear one of us like going over to the fridge, like, you know, which beer do you want? That's fun. And the two of us have very different interests sometimes when it comes to pop culture. And it's, we found where we meet, but we also find we're like, you know, we might bring each other in for different things. Like, she is very much she loves like fashion, and I've known her for 22 years now. So I've learned a lot about stuff like that since meeting her. So bringing her in on topics that like I brought her in on that cartoon episode of It Came From the Syndication, specifically because she's a girl. You know, and I could have had you, I could have had Jack and Eddie, I could have had Mike, I could have had anybody from Freaks or the Fire and Water or whatever, or any network, Gene, anybody, and we could have talked about cartoons. But I was like, no, Amanda is, we're the same age. So we're both the same age. We both grew up around watching the same shows. I was like, well, you've got the perspective of somebody who watched different shows or had a different experience. And that's what I thought about it. And I've had Brett on the show a couple of times too. The Comic-Con episodes we've done, we'll do segments together. And then he was on at least one of the DC Comics episodes where we looked at a couple of like funny animals books, I think. I think we looked at an old Fox and the Crow comic from, because I have like the greatest 50 stories ever told. And an episode, I think it was like Scooby-Doo Team Up or one of those books or something. This goes back about 4 or 5 years ago. So, yeah. So, and he enjoys it. He keeps coming up with ideas. He's like, we should do an episode about, like, if you ever want to have an episode about this or that. And I'm like, yeah, we'll do that, and we'll eventually get around to it. But yeah, he likes it too. Yeah.
How old is your son?
He is now 11. He just started sixth grade.
Yeah, she's 10 now, and she's done a couple podcasts. She's again, yeah. She daddy does it. She wants to do it. So I started getting her own show. She's got like 4 or 5 episodes she's done over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I do kind of go by the shag rule of trying to start recording right around the time of bedtime, because if you've ever had to podcast with Shaq, you know he starts late because and I respect that. I try to do, I start around 8 at the earliest, which my son goes to bed around 8:30, so it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, he likes to hear about it. I don't think he's ever really listened to any of them yet. My wife's listened to a few here and there. She and I have similar podcast interest in some of the more, the people who make money off of podcasting podcasts of the, you know, celebrity-oriented stuff and some of the politics-oriented stuff and stuff like that. She and I listened to one true crime podcast together. We listened to Dirty John, which is, I think, the Los Angeles Times put it together. It's a really good one, but for the most part, we have diverging interests from there. She'll listen to stuff that's more of her thing. So, but yeah, and then there are those times where I will go late into the night and I'll walk upstairs and she'll either already gone to bed or she'll be asleep on the couch. I feel a little guilty. There was one, Bailey and I did a two-parter crossover between Pop Culture Affidavit and Views from the Long Box. And we did the entire recording in one night. Mine was mail order comics. So Mile High and really a deep dive into American comics entertainment and entertainment this month. Remember the hot comics ads from the 90s?
Yeah, I remember that episode.
Yeah, and the second part was Wizard. If you pay attention, he does most of the talking on the Wizard episode, especially toward the back half of it. That's because I kept dozing off because it was like 3 in the morning. Oh, no. And I'm in my living room and I'm trying to like stay awake. And he wasn't putting me to sleep, but I had been up like all day. And so it was just like, so I was at one point, like, I think I don't think I fell asleep, but I definitely kind of zoned out for a little while there and I came back. So,
you know, in the same boat. Yeah, I usually record late at night after my kids go to bed. Unfortunately, I'm on the West Coast, and most of the people I talk with are on the East Coast or Central. So I thought, you know, get my kids out at 8:30, 9:00.
Yeah.
I record about 9:30. But yeah, for most of you guys, it's 11:00, 12:00 by the time I'm ready. So.
Stella and I have it down to it's for school night for both of us, so we don't tend to ramble too much. Mike and I will get 45 minutes into a conversation and be like, oh, yeah, we should really start the episode. I know you do G.I. Joe.
Right.
Do you have all that stuff? Like, are you pulling from like a collection you already have? Are you like me where like when I did the 80 years of DC Comics, I had some stuff, but then I had to like go to my LCS or like find stuff in the quarter bin or like go to eBay and like, what can I get that's like a 99-cent comic or what's digital? Because I didn't.
I've got most of the books. I've got the first three trade paperbacks. Mm-hmm. And then I find them online just to read them for the. It's easier to read my computer a lot of times because I'm getting old and my eyes are going out.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'm 48, mm-hmm. So my sight's going out. So, yeah, so I try to find somebody online I can read them so I can. It's easier for me to see on my computer. But yeah, I do own most of the G.I. Joe books. And like I say, I've got the first three trades and I'm planning on trying to get the rest of the trades just to have them.
Yeah, because I looked at some of the people we see, and they have like large collections of things, whether they be movies or TV. And I have a lot of trades, but I don't have like the comics rooms that some of the other people have. My room's kind of a mess right now, but I just like, and I'm of the thing where like of the age too, where like I don't want to hold on to stuff unless I know I'm absolutely going to want it, because I think like it's just. There's only so much room I have. So it's one of those things where like, you know, and it's been hard because, you know, I think we both on some level probably have that collector's mentality sometimes of like, I got to own everything. And then you're just like, well, I don't have the space. And, you know, like, I don't, where am I going to put all this stuff and who's going to want to see it? And so like, there's some stuff that people talk about that I had years ago that I got rid of. I sold it on eBay or whatever, and I gave it to Goodwill. I've bought a few things back here and there, but yeah, it's kind of like I try to play like a zero sum game. Like if I'm picking something up, and then that kind of limits what I can talk about unless I can get it digitally, which has been very helpful.
Oh yeah.
It's very, very
helpful. I've got like 37 long boxes out in my garage.
Jeez.
I've got to go through and sort and see which ones I want to get rid of, which ones I want to keep. But yeah, most of the shows I do, I say, the G.I. Joe guys, I've got most of those books. The Suicide Squad and Checkmate, I've got those books. Mm-hmm. Manhunter and Starman, I've got all those books. And I've got these Armageddon 2001s.
Mm-hmm.
After this, I'm going to cover The Power of the Atom, and I've got that series. So everything I'm covering, I've got the books I bought when they came out.
Yeah, and I had to go back and collect the non. Most of it I had found it in the cheap bins of my LCS. So I think the first like half of the run I got for about 50 cents each. It's the back half of that series that's hard to find because I think it was a low print run by that time. So I actually ended up paying a few. I think I paid like $5 for the final issue because it was that point I was getting desperate, and I found an auction on eBay that wasn't like $10. So, but yeah, it's. And then when I go to the comic convention, I'm like, you know, I'll come back with a huge bag of stuff, and it's just like, because you'll go diving into those bins and 50 cents a dollar, and there's like old Supermans or old Justice Leagues or Batmans or something, and like you have, I'm not trying to collect these, but I'm like, oh, this is cool. And so I've got all these random Bronze Age Supermans that I really like reading, and but it's not part of a run or a collection or something, so it's still there. My son's kind of inherited. I'm looking at all his toys and stuff that he's got. That's he's got Lego sets he hasn't touched, and I'm like, oh god. Sure, on some level, you might be able to relate to that.
Oh yeah, yeah, very much so. Yeah. Well, I say I bought for my son. My baby's three. His name's Grayson. We named him after, of course, yeah, Grayson. And so I bought him the entire Grayson series when it was coming out. And I'm buying the current Nightwing series.
Nice.
And I've gotten a short box out in my manland for him for when he gets older.
Yeah, Brett is my son, and I think I will have to get that DC Universe streaming service because he really likes the Young Justice cartoon, and I think that's where they're releasing Young Justice.
Yeah, season three, they're supposed to come out with that DC service.
So he's got his books on my pull list, and right now it's still Adventure Time, and I think the Star Wars Adventures books he really still likes, and he'll pull some. I put Scooby the T-Bob on his pull list years ago, and he still likes reading it because it's a fun book, but he's starting to get into stuff that's a little beyond comics. Like he really likes The Legend of Zelda, so stuff like that, and like some video games. Although, for whatever reason, we were last time we were at the con, and he plunked down like a $10 bill at one of the booths, and we just started going through, you know, comic boxes, 50-cent boxes, and he pulled out a bunch of old, like, some Bronze Age, a few Bronze Age Marvels. Like, you know, he was about maybe 9 or 10 at the time, so he would show something to me and be like, can I take this? And, like, he pulled out, like, some, like, Grant Morrison X-Men. I was like, no, that's a little too old for you. But, like, he grabbed a couple of, like, really old Captain America, like late 70s Captain America comics, and a couple of like old Byrne Fantastic Four issues. I'm like, yeah, give it a shot. And some, but he loves reading those old Superman issues.
Oh, very nice.
He's got like a stack on a table next to his bedside. He just has fun. I think sometimes he has more fun with the Hostess ads than he has with the loves the Hostess
nothing
ads.
Wrong with that.
But yeah. But he's got into some stuff. He got me into Gravity Falls and some other shows and stuff like that. So he's a cool kid, and it's kind of fun to share that with him, but without having to push my stuff on him.
Right, that's always a good thing.
But the other day, he was in the library. He was like, I'm looking for, like, a Star Wars novel. I was like, buddy, I've got, like, and I have the Aftermath trilogy, and I have a couple, I have Phasma, and I have another one of the newer EU books. I'm like, here's, like, 5 books. Like, we're at home. You know, and I said, start with those. He's like, okay. So it's kind of cool that, like, there's some stuff that he really likes that I do, and
that's always nice.
Yeah.
So as far as podcasting, what do you enjoy the most about doing your podcasting?
It's twofold. One is all of the different people I've met and got to talk to. And the fact that I can, like, if I plan it out enough, I can get in touch with somebody, be like, hey, like with Mike Bailey, when we did the drama episode of the Came From Syndication together, he was the first person I thought of. And I had said, do you want to come on? And we made the arrangement and stuff like that. And or I would grab Stella for an episode of something or other, or Amanda, my wife, or something. It's like, you know, being able to, like, connect with people and talk, sit down and talk. And sometimes I talk too much, but talk is really cool.
It's always a good thing.
But then like indulging that nerd, you know, love that I have for these things, where like a lot of Friday nights when I was in high school was me going to the video store and renting something that looked interesting, or like the same 5 like 80s teen comedies over and over, like, you know, re-renting The Breakfast Club again because I just love that movie, or Say Anything, or Better Off Dead again.
I'm right behind you, buddy.
Man, And that's a real shame when folks be throwing away a perfectly good white boy like that.
Or, like, watching old Star Trek reruns in my parents' basement and stuff because, you know, nobody was around and I had nothing better to do. And it's almost like now, like, I always kind of wanted someone to hang out with and watch that stuff with. And I would have somebody every once in a while, but, like, now it's like, you know, I just get to kind of talk into a microphone. It's almost like I found the outlet for that in a way that I never had 20, 25 years ago because it really didn't exist at the time. I mean, maybe it existed in that sort of Christian Slater pump up the volume way, but that was never never me, you know? So it's like, it's almost like I get to kind of be a teenager, like a nerdy teenager again, at least for the hour or a couple of hours that I do this. And when I talk to, it's funny, like last year I did The Princess Bride, and the friend I had on was my friend Amanda, not my wife, my friend Amanda, who has never been on a podcast before, but she's like a huge fan. So the only other person I had thought of for that episode was my sister. My sister wasn't available. So it was like, all right, Amanda, come on. And she's like, wait, when we're done, she's like, wait a second, this was your 70-something episode? It was like my 77th episode. I said, yeah. She's like, how long have you been podcasting? I said, oh, yeah, since like 2012 or whatever. She's like, oh, so you were doing this before it was cool. I was like, so I'm like, I'm not cool, but thank you.
Thank you, I think.
Yeah, she's really nice. She meant it as a compliment.
Definitely.
But yeah, it's the fact that I get to do this and I get to have fun with the editing and the playing around with music and clips and stuff like that. As tedious as that can get, because if you've ever had to do an episode about a movie, a TV show, and you're using a lot of clips, like you got to go out and find the clips, you got to drop the clip in, you got to some of those syndication episodes, I love them, but some of them got to the point where it took me 3 days to edit one episode because I'm trying to find like this theme, and by like an hour and a half would go by and I've edited like maybe 30 minutes of the show and I'm like, I need to take a break. So I'd come back the next day. So even that is fun to do because it's just like, you know, I get to play with all my toys, you know, and that's the real fun of it.
Well, that's like some of my shows. I throw clips in once in a while. And yeah, sometimes my problem is I'll go to YouTube to search for something and then I'll fall down the YouTube rabbit hole and, let me see this. I got to get back to editing. Wait a minute. I'm doing something.
How many times have you hit the watch later, add to watch later thing? Because you're just like, no, I got to get back at doing this. I have like all of those videos.
I'll go watch this later. I got to get back to editing. But yeah, it's my problem. Sometimes finding clips is, yeah, I'll fall down that rabbit hole and let me check out. This looks interesting. Yeah. This looks interesting. Well, I was doing something an hour ago. Let's get back to that.
90s commercials, yes. Yeah.
I think I found the 81.
Yeah, countdown lists are my kryptonite on YouTube. It's like those Screen Rant ones and the What Culture. And like some, half of them suck, but I'm just like Dark Five. I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
So we've talked about, you've had a bunch of different guests on. Is there any guest in particular that you'd like to get on your show? There's some guests that you're looking to get?
At the moment, I'm trying to think. There's a few people that like who are not in the podcasting herd that I think that I've tried. Like he never got back to me, and I didn't expect it to. I shot a random email to the guy's name is Matt, and he runs the blog Dinosaur Dracula. He ran for years the website X Entertainment, and he's another guy who's like, he writes about a lot of the same stuff I do, and I think on some level I'm also kind of ripping him off because when I used to work in an office before I was a teacher, I used to read his blog a lot. I reached out to him like last year. I was like, hey, I'm doing an episode. I think it was something along the lines of what I did with the syndication. I was like, you know, I would love to have you come on and talk about this, but he never got back to me. So I was like, you know, it's nothing against him. It was just kind of a shot in the dark. I would love to be able to interview somebody on the order of of somebody who was like on one of the shows that I watched or something like that. I'm still blown away by the fact that Rob Kelly got Richard Donner. What? But like,
that's amazing. Yeah,
it's amazing to me that I got to spend like a few minutes with like Michael Golden or Marv Wolfman. And George Perez, just because we were standing in line and I said, hey, I'm doing a podcast. Do you mind if I record a conversation? They were like, go ahead. Or Jimmy Palmiotti, like the comics pros have been really, really cool. And I had I had Doug Murray, who used to write the Nom, and Wayne Van Zant, who was one of the artists for a long time, on the show through an interview. And I'd like to be able to talk to more people like that, or maybe not that, like, you know, I don't think I'd ever get somebody on the level of a really like A-list person, you know, like I've done China Beach for 4 episodes. I don't think if I ever tried to reach out to Dana Delaney, she would ever come on the show, you know, like, but I'm a fan of the original Degrassi show from Canada from the 80s. And I've done a few blog posts on it. I plan on doing an episode on it at some point. I just need to figure out what I want to do. I would love to be able to interview at least one or two of the actors and people like that. So on that level, I'd like to get more people who were like kind of involved in some of the stuff that I have to get over my social anxiety and kind of work up the guts and find the time to do it too. Sometimes schedules don't work out. On the non-creator level, I'm trying to think of people who I would like to, I've tried to get Scott to come on Gardner, but he's like incredibly busy with stuff. I would love to get, if you ever, like, my wife and I sitting down and having drinks and talking about stuff like that is fun. When my sister and my brother-in-law come down, it's really fun there. And I would love to be able to figure out, like, record some of that and turn it into a show, but it's something where I'm never able to. So sometimes, like, I think of the people that I am friends with who have never done podcasting, and I like dragging them into this too because they've never done it before, and it's just kind of a fun conversation between two friends. Yeah, but right now it's less of like if there's anybody I've wanted to have on for something, or if it's more of a I would like to do a topic and I want to grab like this particular person and like how can we make that happen. So
right, the final question I have for you at this point is, you've been doing this for several years now, is there any advice that you want to give, that you can give to new podcasters, if there's someone that's wanting to start a podcast, do you have any advice for them?
I would say that it's actually kind of, I'm going to put my writing teacher hat on and say that you want to be organized enough to have an idea of what the show is going to look like when you put that first episode out. When you're planning it, there were a couple of times where I tried to record episodes of something that early in the day, where I thought, oh, I'm just going to grab a comic book and talk about it. I'm going to wing it. And then those never saw the light of day because I stumbled through the first few minutes. I was like, wow, this is actually, you know, like it was almost like I started learning from my mistakes early there. Also, if you're doing, it sounds odd to say this, but like if you have an endpoint in mind, that helps too. Like with In Country, I know where it's going to end. It might not end when I thought it would, because if I had stayed consistent on my schedule, I think it would have ended already, or it would have been ending around right now. But I fell off for a while, or I went to a monthly instead of a biweekly. But even then, I always know that I'm never going to go past the show episode 100. I'm like, that's the last one. And that really helps because it has that kind of a structure in place. If you're doing a show where you're covering the same topic, like a comic series or a television series or something every episode, my advice is you don't have to lock yourself into a certain format, but have kind of an idea of a routine that you're going to do, because then your audience can expect something every episode, whether it be that you cover certain things in certain orders, you always go in with something like every episode of Batgirl, the Oracle, as long or short as they can be. Stella always does sort of the same 3 or 4 things. She does the old, stuff. She breaks for a song. She does the new stuff. She has Chris come on to do, it was Batman 66 for a while. Now it's the Batman Adventures comic. And then she does like the literature recommendation. And you know, like Jeff and Mike have their thing on From Crisis to Crisis. They're kind of breaking it out now, but they had like Meanwhile at the Daily Planet. They have Meanwhile in the DC Universe. And having that familiarity when you're building your audience helps the audience stay with you, but it also helps like new people come in with like a new episode. And then the other thing I would be like is like it costs little to nothing to start. Get used to the sound of your own voice, because you're going to hear it a lot, especially when you're editing, and pick something that you really have fun with. Like the minute it starts to become a chore, you don't have to quit, but it's okay to step away from it a little bit because maybe you've burned out on the topic and you just want to be like, okay, I need to recharge. So it's okay to step away from it every once in a while. Don't feel the pressure to put out something all the time. And don't worry if anybody's listening or not. Like, there's so – you're, like, kind of putting it out into the ether, and the internet's, like, such a huge place. And the fact that I have, like, you know, people who write into me, or, like, even my friends who are, like – or you guys who are, like, hey, I love the show or whatever. It's – that's a reward for me. I just kind of do it because I really love to do it. So – my advice is, like, you know, kind of be organized enough so that you can get into a routine, and the kinks will work themselves out. And then, you know, if you start to burn out a little bit, it's okay to take a little break and come back to it and rediscover what you loved about it.
That's very good advice. And, I thank you very much for talking with me tonight.
Thanks for having me on. This is fun.
I always enjoy it. Always, yeah. Anytime you're appearing on my shows, definitely let me know. I'm definitely up for talking with you again. I had a blast. But before I let you go, why don't you tell about there if they want to hear more about you? I mean, we've talked about your shows. Why don't you tell where they can find your shows at and wherever else you have to stuff?
You can find all three shows at 2TrueFreaks.com. But Pop Culture Affidavit and In Country also have a home at PopCultureAffidavit.com. That is where I also have blog posts and other material. You can follow me also on Twitter at PopAff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. If you're really interested in a required reading with Tom and Stella, which is the other show that I have with Stella, we have a website for that. It's requiredreadingwithtomandstella.com. And we post the show notes and stuff to that as well.
Very good. Well, again, thank you very much for taking time out, like I said, to talk to me. I appreciate it. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon. All right,
thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to Head Speaks. Be sure to catch our other shows on the network, G.I. Joe, Royal American Headcast, The Starman, Manhunter Adventure Hour, and Task Force X. Be sure to leave us some feedback. Rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. Send us an email at headspeaks@headspeaks.com. Or leave feedback on the Facebook page or the blog. Join us next month, where we once again continue our coverage of Armageddon 2001. Well, again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Remember, Head has spoken. Thank you for listening to another fantastic episode of Head Speaks. Hope you enjoyed it. If so, let me know. Drop me an email to head@headspeaks.com or visit our home at head.headspeaks.com. You can also visit and talk with me on Facebook and Google+, both under Head Speaks. You can also send an MP3 file with your thoughts, and I can play that on the air. And you can also get more of me on my other podcasts. Be sure to listen to Task Force X, where monthly I look at John Ostringer's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate comics from the 80s and early 90s. Also, over on G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, my podcasting friends Ryan Daly and Kyle Benning, along with myself, are looking at all of the G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero comics and related titles from Marvel and IDW. All of my headcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher, along with the respective blogs and my main page at headspeaks.com. All comments, thoughts, and opinions expressed on Head Speaks are owned wholly by the speaker of said comments and do not express the opinions of Head Speaks, unless, of course, I'm the one making the comments. Head Speaks, Task Force X, and G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, are all part of the Headcast family. So join us next month for another wonderful episode of Head Speaks. Until then, I'll see you in the funny pages. Good night.